back deck because I really wanted to sit here. Not because it's the ideal location for recording. You can maybe tell because there's a plane flying overhead right now. and it's also kind of windy. But my chair's really comfortable out here.
Yeah, these chairs are quite nice.
Yeah, and it's warm.
It's, like, really nice outside, too.
Yeah.
We're in the shade.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get sunburn, which is important. Skin health, but...
It's perfect. The sound quality, I don't know, might be a disaster, but...
Okay, when is it ever not? Last podcast had great sound quality, except for those times where I touched the microphone.
Except when we touched the table microphones on, yeah.
But besides that, it was, like, really an upgrade, so...
We're slowly learning from mistakes.
And maybe this will be our biggest mistake yet. We'll find some to find out.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So this week we read House of Purple Cedar by Tim Tingle. This was the book that we were supposed to talk about last week.
But then we took a hiatus from They Were Still I, and now we're back. And it's August.
It's barely August, though, so we could almost consider it July.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, okay, Tim Tingle, the author, is a member of the Choctaw Nation, so by an author of color, and then about people of color as well. Mm-hmm. A couple of the books we read were by, about characters of color, but written by white authors. Mm-hmm. But this one is both.
Woo!
So, exciting. And it won the, like, American Indian Literary Association, is that what it's called? Their award for best young adult book. It doesn't read a ton like in a young adult book.
No, and in fact, it was shelved in the adult section of our library.
It also has the tag mystery on it, though, so, like, I don't know what they were doing over at the shelving.
I didn't even notice that. And also, in one of... Because it is, it's one of those books that is kind of classifiable as both. Which is strange and never happens, like, ever, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to think that the people who said it was YA were wrong.
I am, too. Tim Tingle, the author, in one of his interviews, talked about that a little bit and how he thought, because of kind of the, like, nature of the...
Subject matter,
that would be more appropriate for an adult book. I guess one of the narrators... Is it... Not even a teen, though. She's, like, reflecting...
11.
Well, she's reflecting back on her... childhood as an adult for the most part.
Yeah, there's either two or three narrative voices depending on how you want to look at it. There's we had the perspective of Rose, and she's telling it from the perspective of being 11 when things are happening, and also the perspective of being like an old woman near death reflecting back on her experiences. So if you want to call that one or two, whatever. And the other narrative voice is omniscient.
Yeah. So I think the people that are calling it YA are really using that Rose as an 11-year-old narrator. Wow. An 11-year-old narrator to classify that as YA, but, like, even if she was the narrator the whole time, which she isn't, she's 11, which isn't young adult. That's a child.
Yeah, and it's definitely not a children's book. I'm sure about that.
100% sure of that. I'm, like, also pretty sure it's not a young adult book. Like, this is an adult book.
I don't think so. I don't consider it a young adult book. And part of it is, like, the quality. Like, it's a quality book.
Right. It reads
like literary fiction.
Right, very much so. It reads like something that, like, has, like, you'd read it
merit.
In school. Yeah, like, you would read it in school. And
quite frankly, young adult books generally don't. Like,
right.
I'm willing to be proved wrong, kind of, but, like, someone bring me a young adult book that reads, like, actual, honest to God literature.
Well, for the most part, when... Even books that are about teens read that way, we don't classify them as young adults.
Exactly, yeah.
So, and perhaps that is, like, a fault of the YA genre a little bit, not to, like, incorporate those.
What do you mean? You mean, so, like, are you, like, talking about, like, Catcher in the Rye?
Yeah.
Like, you know, told from a teenage perspective, but considered to be...
Not, like, an adult book.
Literature.
It goes above the genre. But I think that becomes problematic because I think a lot of... Like, teens only read in the young adult section.
Yeah.
We've talked about this a little bit before.
Yeah.
But there's so many books that, like, are written about teens that, like, have more merit. Like, Pride and Prejudice, Catcher in the Rye, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That should be incorporated into teens reading and not just their school reading. But anyway, side note.
So you think we should show books like that in the YA section and an adult?
I think we have, yeah, we have multiple copies of the library, so right. Why not throw a couple in YA?
That's true. Yeah, that could be helpful. You know, maybe someone will stumble upon something that, yeah. The real book.
Well, we've tried to do that. Remember when Twilight came out and they redid all of those book covers? There was, like, Wuthering Heights.
Oh,
there
my was God.
Jane Eyre. Like, all of those, like, gothic sickening. Romances.
They, yeah, like, all the books were, like, referenced in Twilight.
And, like, black and red.
White and red, yeah.
Yeah. And stuck them in, like, the young adult section of yeah. Borders.
What a sham.
Yeah.
Borders.
But, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like... Or additionally, maybe we should have some books in YA that include characters that are not all teens. Because I think YA is notorious for not having anything besides teens.
Okay, but isn't that literally the point of the genre? Like, what would go in YA if it wasn't about...
I don't know. We should abolish the genre.
I mean, I think that's what YA is. It's genre fiction. It's not mystery. Then you can get into there's YA mystery, is YA romance, whatever. Right. You could break it down further, but I think, you know, that's what young adult is. It's not only, like, an age group for fiction, it's also genre fiction.
Yeah.
I just think, and we talked about this, like, on Salt to the Sea, and I'm sure we talked about it more than one time. Obviously, we're not finished talking about it. And obviously, we also haven't reached, like, a consensus. Like, we haven't figured it out yet, which is probably why we keep talking about it, but I just think it'd be weird to think of YA literature. We can talk about, okay, here's literature, Catch in the Rye, Pride and Prejudice, stuff we could show in the YA section. If it's about teens or whatever.
Yeah.
But it'd be weird to just put it there.
Right. No,
it has to go in literature first. It has to go in... Oh, there's some little song. I don't know if you can hear that or not.
Well,
it's atmospheric. It adds to the experience.
So yeah. Anyway. This book is not a young adult book, but we read it anyway, We're going to tell you about
the
it.
American now it's too late. Literary Association gave it their prize for, like, best young adult novel.
Yeah. I mean, and it was, like, a good novel, so.
Yeah.
I also don't know how many options they have.
I don't know what the other contenders for the prize were.
Right.
Presumably, I'm sure there was something.
There's some
but
other,
it is a small,
yeah,
not necessarily genre, but it's hard to find books that are,
yeah,
written by or about American Indians. Did you want to talk about that article?
What?
Do you want to talk about that article?
Yeah, I was reading this article as I was kind of, like, prepping for this podcast, and there's this article
prep, it's just completely not evident.
Yeah, sometimes we do prep. And... This article is about how it's very rare to find a book about American Indians that doesn't involve...
Even just, like, American Indians in the news,
right? Any media representation of American Indians that doesn't involve the 4 Ds, drumming, dancing, drunkenness, and death, which was interesting. And not that those can't show up in...
Uh-huh. And they're also real pirates.
Right, not that they just can't experience. Show up in a book, just because they're, like, death and drunkenness are, like, a part of everyone's experience, particularly mm-hmm. death.
Yeah, no one gets
but
that
when
one.
The story just revolves around those 4 Ds, that becomes problematic. It becomes a caricature
right.
of what it's like to be, a Native American. And it almost makes it seem like these are, like, historical relics, I think,
right.
when they're just relegated to only be talking about their, for 3 of the Ds, so the death, obviously, the dancing and the drumming, it makes uh-huh. them seem like they're just, like, this, like, quaint little thing that is from a bygone era.
Yeah.
It's like when you go and tour, like, a historic home and they, like, dress up in costume.
Yeah.
Like, it has a very similar feel. I think that becomes problematic because these communities are still, like, alive and well and thriving in some areas and, you know, they continue to evolve and mm-hmm. interact with what's happening currently, as well as keeping some of their traditions mm-hmm. alive. And then drunkenness becomes a problem because, again, it becomes just, like, the caricature
yeah.
of what it looks like to be a modern Indian is just to be, like, drunk all the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there was some, at, like, a sort of similar situation people were talking about. I think it was when they just did, like, I don't really know, a new version of Roots, the mm-hmm. some people that was like sort of their introduction to it. They hadn't seen it the first time, all that stuff. So in one way, it was good, particularly for the people that were being introduced to it. And another, there was also like a little bit of backlash with people being like, "This is not like the totality of the Black experience," and like when all you continue to produce are like narratives about suffering and especially slavery, like you think of 12 Years a Slave, like was very lauded, but also is a portrayal of only like one aspect of the Black, and especially when it's like a historical Black experience, you know, like 12 Years a Slave gets a lot more press than like a Black film about, or a film about like violence against the Black community today, because I mean part of it is like 12 Years a Slave makes everyone like, it's not like a feel good movie. I actually haven't seen it, but it's have the idea. It's not at all a feel good movie, but in one way you're like, oh, that was horrible,
right?
But now it's over, so like we can feel better about ourselves today because it's not happening now,
right?
So it becomes sort of just like distancing of even issues today.
Yeah,
I got off track. I don't know.
And I think it also, like, similarly, even when all we do is kind of the, you think about what was it, Precious, that was about, that, like, also was pretty lauded and it was modern.
Mm-hmm.
But when all of the stories that get pressed are, like, black people suffering, that all the narratives are just, like, their struggles, even though that's obviously an important narrative to share, that there's no stories about, like, triumphs. And the ways in which life is, like, ordinary and sometimes, and even, like, great sometimes, that becomes problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I was reading something, I don't know, maybe I made it up. Because I remember, like, very few details. But I feel like I was reading something about someone complaining about how, like, quote-unquote, like, sort of strong female characters in, like, movies, TV, whatever, like, often have these, like, tragic backstories that often center around, like, rape or assault, and just, like, how problematic that was, too.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's not a real experience. It's not like it doesn't, it's not something that, like, we need to portray. But when, like, it just becomes sort of, like a cliche or a tool to, like, give emotional depth or whatever, it's, like, exploitative.
Right. Right, when the only way you can find a way to make these characters emotionally relatable is to have some huge tragedy happen, then, like, clearly there's a flaw in the way, like, this, the media around this, this minority is being created, that the only way that the masses can have an emotional connection is if, like, something horrific has happened.
Yeah.
Like, we can't relate to them on a human level.
Yeah, and it's a huge problem in YA, too. Like, so much of the genre, like, so many of the books are just, like, it's just, like, layering, like, tragedy on with, like, a ladle, like, particularly, especially, and it's, I don't know, it's particularly glaring, I feel like, in books that are YA books about, like, romantic relationships, which, again, is, like, every single one.
We've only
we brought that up before.
This one, I guess, didn't really have a romantic subplot.
It also wasn't really YA.
But the only other one that we read without a romantic subplot was The Fixer, and that is, I'm sure, coming in later.
Like, yeah, I think that was just because it was set up. Yeah.
They set one up, but, like, we did never get...
City of the Beast didn't have one.
Really?
You know, not really.
That's true. They were, like,
but it was also, like, sort of a children's book.
That was also a children's book.
All the ones that didn't have one are sort of exceptions.
Which is so strange, because, like, honestly, like, my time when I was a young adult, so, like, 13 to 18, like, I didn't have any romance in my life, really.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, I might have had, like, a crush on a boy. But even that was, like, few and far between. Like, my life did not revolve around that at all.
Yeah, neither did mine. But that's...
And neither did most people we knew.
I don't know if we want to talk about most people we knew as being representative. We were
friends with.
As the young adult experience.
Yeah, okay, we were friends with...
We maybe lived, like, slightly... But it was, like, a sheltered-by-choice lifestyle. We were very busy with academics.
But, like, who reads YA? I feel like it's those kids that are sheltered and live in the academic bubble.
Maybe.
Like, I mean, sure, I'm sure some people with boyfriends read YA. But I think maybe the people that, like, all they do is study and then occasionally they get to read a book.
I mean, Like, I get it. Like, it's still an interesting subject.
Yeah. I loved me some Twilight when I was 15.
Yeah, I mean...
But it would have been cool if there were some
other stories. It's an easy way to make a good story to read.
Yeah. Not diversity in my experiences.
Yeah. No, but so many of them are just, like, creating, like, horribly tragic backstories. For practically all the characters. Sometimes it's not even, like, it's not even just the girl who, like, has this tragic backstory. Sometimes it's, like, almost like a competition between both of our right. lead characters, and it's just, like, my God.
And they're, like, fixing each other with their romance, which is a horrible idea to tell teens.
That's
not how you fix yourself.
That's also really problematic. Can you tell that we went to a liberal arts school because what we got out of our 4-year degree was the word problematic?
Yeah. It's so strange. I, like, will talk to my family and I'll realize how much of that I've incorporated into my life. But then also last weekend I was down back in the school I went to, or the town I went to school in, hanging out with some kids I went to school with who are still living in that town. And I was like, man, I am just not as about this as you people are. Like, I feel like I've secured a very happy medium where I've, like, learned a lot.
Uh-huh.
But I've also not...
I'm not going to drink all that Kool-Aid.
I'm not going to drink it all. There's too much. Anyway, should we get on to the book?
Yes.
Picture to think on that. Do we want to start on the book? Maybe
I'm
not.
I'm still back on, like, complaining about tragedy in YA.
That's, like, our favorite tragic topic, if you haven't noticed. Okay, do we want to start?
Sometimes they're just... Never mind.
She doesn't want to start on this book. Anyway, I'm going to start on this book.
Okay.
So this book opens, because we already kind of introduced you to Rose. So it opens with Rose, age 11, and she goes to this girl's school, and it's a boarding school. So they live there. That's how boarding schools work. And the school gets burned down. So we kind of open with the school burning down. And Rose escapes, but 20 girls die in the fire at the school. And this is actually based on a real event, a real school that was burnt down. And they really suspect arson, but it wasn't really investigated at the time. And at this point, like,
too late. By suspect arson, it means definitely arson.
Yeah, they're, like, pretty sure it was arson.
And this is something that,
there was a string of, like, burnings of buildings that were, like, really important to the local tribes.
Mm-hmm.
So... That doesn't seem accidental.
Yeah.
They didn't all, like, leave candles.
They all have faulty wiring.
Great.
Electricity, I think, is not really a thing at this time.
That's why it's so faulty.
When is electricity invented?
I don't know.
I'm a history teacher, guys. Can you tell? I know, like, I'm a math teacher, history. So. That's not true.
I'm looking at that.
We're really dumb.
I feel like it was earlier than that, but I feel like it wasn't common at all either.
Well, yeah, also, even if it was invented, I don't expect to see it out in Indian territory.
Yeah,
so.
Electricity was invented in 1821.
Really?
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Oh my god. By Michael... No, that's not...
What?
The electric motor was invented in 1821.
I'm talking about
the electrical circuit was invented
in 1827. You know who invented the light bulb? Thomas Edison. That's something I know for a fact.
What about, what's his name? Tesla. Didn't he invent light bulbs, too?
No.
There's someone else that started him up. Tesla
I think
invent?
You're talking about the telephone.
Maybe.
Why?
Tesla invented stuff and then, like, didn't get credit for some of it, right?
Tesla invented stuff, yes. We're talking about an area of history that I know very little about, so.
When was the light bulb invented?
Now we're looking at that.
1879. So, yeah, these people didn't have a light bulb. Yeah. Like, 10 years later.
Yeah, there's also a long time with technology where things are super, super expensive.
Great.
Anyway, I'm not sure.
Anyway,
this is like a real event that actually happened. So this is taking place in Scullyville, in what is Oklahoma now, but Indian Territory then. Scullyville as a town doesn't exist anymore. But at the time, it was sort of the capital, basically, of the Choctaw Nation. And it's taking place there, and there's also a neighboring town with white people called Spiro.
But they're, like, really neighboring, like, they go into Spiro pretty frequently.
Yeah. So it opens up the burning of the school, and then it's been a lot of time, I guess, before the podcast. trying to get clear on what exactly, if we had to nail this book down, what was it about? Because it's a little bit harder to give a plot summary of this book. Not that we're ever just, like, on fire with our plot summaries. But we're going to give, like, a glancing overview. We didn't talk about this, but I'm now briefing this, y'all. A glancing overview of the plot. This is, I think what we've decided on is that this is really Rose's story, looking back on specifically her grandparents and what they meant for her, what they meant for the community.
So because it's told from Rose's perspective, looking back, it's told in a lot of, like, kind of episodes. It's very episodic. And so we are very event-focused rather than driven by a larger overarching narrative. Although there are some narrative threads you can probably trace, it really is focused more, like, event by event.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim said that one of his interviews, so you can't disagree with me.
Yes.
Which I think was one of the reasons we had such a hard time kind of nailing down the larger plot, or, like, the larger narrative structure, because it is told episodically.
This is very much a book that I think it would have benefited us if we had read it more like we read books for school, slowly, taking notes, talking about it in stages. We would have done better. So this is our excuse for being bad readers again.
Our favorite excuse.
We read this book like we read the other podcast books, and the other podcast books did not need as much of our attention.
Right.
And would not have benefited as much from so much analysis, you know? Like, The Fixer, I liked it. Unspoken, I liked it. These books, that they were enjoyable, but, like, we didn't have to do a lot of hardcore analysis, okay? And if we had, we wouldn't have gotten a lot more than we did. This is a book that would have more layers and, like, would be more rewarding to actually study, but...
But we did it, okay?
Grandfather, they go into town, they go into Spyro to, like, watch the trains. Because it's still a time in history where watching the trains is exciting and new and fun. Yeah. Now, oh my god, okay, side note. Okay, I didn't know this. But I found out when I was nannying a child with special needs who this was apparently, like, he really enjoyed it. I would never have found this corner of YouTube on my own, but there are, I guess, whole groups of people, I don't know how large these groups are, but there's some group of people out there who will go videotape trains, just trains moving, and put them on YouTube. There's, like, hour-long YouTube videos of trains moving.
There's something on YouTube for literally everyone.
Can someone explain this to me? Like, I, in the aggregate, sort of just, like, in the abstract, like, I think trains are cool. Yeah, sure, fine. I like to go on trains. Sure. I wouldn't mind, like, I enjoy, like, the train whistles that you can hear sometimes, like, out my window at night. That's nice.
Yeah, I'll even go to a train museum. Learn about the history of a train. I've been to a train museum. It's not a whole day trip. It's like a before lunch trip. But
yeah. Make sure we get out of there before noon. But
we can go home and eat lunch. We don't need to eat lunch here. Sort of trip. But, you know, it was still fun.
Yeah. But I can't imagine anyone who's so freaking interested in trains that they would, A, not only the people that are out there filming trains, but then the people who are sitting at home watching an hour to 2 hours of, like, specific trains, and they'll just, like, watch, like, the wheels spin on them. And I just, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen in my whole life. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
I don't understand. YouTube is a weird place.
YouTube is a bizarre place, yeah. And also all the people that are, like videos of, like, random toys.
Toys, like, are so big. Kinder eggs. They have, like, literal millions of subscribers. These people are, like, making a six-figure income.
Who are these
toys.
People?
I don't know. It's, like, kind of weird. It's so strange. So strange.
But. Anyway, okay, so this book. Okay, so they went down to watch the trains. That was all we were trying to say.
We might cut that, because I think also the wind is, like, pretty horrible.
I'm going to figure that out later. I'm sure it can be fixed. Ha 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 ha. And Marshall Hardwick is the town's marshal, and he is a horrible person.
Yep.
He is, yeah.
Like, the worst. We find out more and more about why he's horrible as the book continues, but, like, we start out knowing he's pretty horrible.
Yeah, he's clearly an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. He seems to be drunk a lot of the time, if not all the time. And I think he's drunk when he meets up with this family, Rose's family, on the train platform. And he's there to, like, say hello to the new Indian agent who is arriving. And he's late, maybe because he's drunk, I don't know. But he's late, and so he misses him. And so then he gets upset, and then he ends up just, like, it's bizarre. It's just, like, a random act of violence that's, like, unprovoked. He, like, picks up a wooden door and just, like, slams it into the side of Rose's grandmother's face. Which I was kind of worried was going to kill him. Like, blood force trauma to the head. But it doesn't actually. It's just, like, quite painful.
Yeah, and it breaks his glasses, which is, like, important. Like, becomes, like, a symbol as the book continues on.
Yeah,
and Rose talks about it.
Has a spider web.
Yeah, and so... and because of the way that Amafo, like, chooses to kind of proceed after this, it becomes symbolic of, like, the wisdom of the elders and, like, looking through mm-hmm. the eyes of Rose's grandfather. Because mm-hmm. she puts on the glasses and is like, this is weird. And he refuses to get them fixed. So, like, this novel takes place over about the course of a year, and he has the broken glasses the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, no one steps in, no one does anything, no one is what you could call an active bystander. Is that what yeah. the term is?
Yeah, that's what we called it in high school.
An active bystander. None of these people went to a college workshop on being a bystander.
You got a free tank top if you went to one at mine. I have two for some reason.
Yes, so everybody just, like, stands around and is, like, deal with that on your own. And so... So then it becomes about, okay, what's going to be the Choctaw community's response to this, like, violence against the community? Especially when you consider that the fact that, like, the school got burned down earlier. Like, clearly, people are out to get them. And there's a lot of people in the community who just want to respond in kind, and it's really Rose's grandfather who decides on this nonviolent approach, that they're not going to be vindictive. And instead, so his whole thing is he's going to go into town now, like, all the time, and, like, confront the marshal in the sense of, being nice to him, mm-hmm. but, like, letting the whole town see, like, how badly bruised his face is, like, his broken glasses, is sort of just, like, a way to call them out silently.
Right. Yeah. Because what happens is, like, the whole... Choctaw community, like, gathers at Rose's grandparents' house, Rose's house, that night, and, like, talk about it, and they, like, are up the whole night, well, not the whole night, they're up for a while,
mm-hmm.
and then, yeah, Amafo explains what he's gonna do, mm-hmm. and everyone's like, cool, and they leave.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just wanted to talk about the community's process for deciding, like, how to proceed.
Yeah.
And they, like, really respect Amafo because he's one of the, like, elders in the community, and so, like, mm-hmm. whatever he says goes. Like, even though, yeah, never mind.
Yeah. And he waits all the way to the end. He doesn't say anything.
Yeah, he lets
everyone has just, like, vented every single thing.
Right.
And then he speaks up, you know, like, one time, and, like, that's how it is.
And then he's like, okay, we're gonna go to bed. You guys can stay here if you want, but we're going to bed. Which is, like, great. Such a, like, so then everyone just goes home because, like, it's done.
Yeah.
Is what's happening. So the next day he does that. Mm-hmm. He goes into town.
Yeah, and so this is where we get a bunch of sort of, like, side characters almost and, like, these side narrative threads. And it becomes a story about his response to the violence. And then there's this big, and this is something Michelle and I were discussing before the podcast, trying to, like, nail down the plot and the driving force in the book, because Marshall Hardwick, this, like, violent psychopath, is driving a large part of the narrative.
Right.
And we didn't, almost to the point where you would think maybe this is a story about Marshall Hardwick.
Right.
Because he really seems to be involved in freaking everything.
Right.
From the beginning to the end. Which I was, and I assume you were, also rather uncomfortable about talking about this book framed along the lens of, like, a white side character, especially also, like, the villain of the story.
Right, I didn't want to make antagonist. It does really seem like it's framed around him, but I think by saying that, like, gives off a wrong impression as well. Because, like, as much as he's a driving force in most of the narrative, what you care about is how the community reacts to his actions. And that's, like, really what the story is about, is how this community responds. But I think it becomes larger, and it's just, like, this community's response led by Amafo.
Amafo is Rose's grandfather.
Yes.
I'm assuming that is... But that's not his name, that's just a Choctaw word for grandfather. Though, I could also be wrong. Also, we could also be pronouncing, like, all these words wrong. I think that's the only one we've tried so far.
Amafo and Choctaw. We're pretty sure about Choctaw.
Well, I'm
like 100% Paige has visited them.
I've been to Choctaw, Oklahoma, which actually doesn't, well, you know, it does. I don't know. As we said, Scullyville was the capital of the Choctaw Nation. Obviously, it's not anymore because it's ghost town, but I've been to Choctaw, Oklahoma. Went to a barrel race. Anyway, what were you talking about? The book.
They go into the city.
Yeah. But I think it'd be easy, like, it'd be an easy trap to fall into of thinking that this story is about this white man.
Yeah.
But obviously that seems probably not correct. I mean, given that it's, again, this is supposed to be a Choctaw story. That would be a problem.
Yeah.
Presumably. Anyway, so it's about this community's response. We're gonna have to skip over a lot of the middle.
You should go the rattlesnake.
Maybe not that much, but you start to see the compassion of other people.
Right. And you start to see that, like, the author is not trying to paint, like, everyone who is white under the same umbrella as the sheriff. In fact, the sheriff is probably the only character that would be considered, like, truly, like, bad and, like, actively evil. A lot of them are, like, we come to meet the train station, like, ticket man.
Station master.
The station master. And, like, he observed what happened and, like, didn't step in. And so, like...
I thought he didn't see it. I thought he said he was in his office. And so he missed it. I don't know.
But either way, he didn't step in. And, like, no one steps in. Even in the days afterwards, no one, like, stands up to the sheriff, really. But we see that these people, that there's also, like, most of the people are, like, good people. And so one of the characters we come to meet and is kind of probably who I would consider, like, the most, like, actively good white character that we see is the one-legged shopkeeper. So she doesn't own this general store in Spyro, but she manages it for the guy. And the guy, the owner, is also there, but she's, like, pretty much in charge, is what we kind of come to find out, is that she's better with interacting with the people and, like, doing those sorts of things. And so the owner kind of lets her, and they have a kind of funny little relationship where he, like, tells her not to do things and she does them anyway, and they, like, work out for the best, and he's, like, okay with it. But she sees Amafo coming to town the next day, and she's like, what the heck? And so she winds up, like, kind of,
she calls a doctor to like bandage his face
and give him medical care. And is also like, no, you shouldn't go and confront Marshall.
Yeah, everyone's like, please don't. Because everyone's still scared of, like, what must happen. Because, he's a crazy person.
He's, like, he's crazy, he's drunk, so he's not always predictable.
He beats his wife.
He does beat his wife.
Everyone knows about it, but obviously we're not going to
do anything. Right. So she kind of calls a doctor, make sure he's taken care of. And then when he does go across the street that day to talk to Marshall, she goes upstairs and...
as a sniper.
And is in the upstairs attic window with a gun, making sure that if something starts to go awry, she's going to take care of it. So she's, like, the coolest. She's pretty cool.
Yeah.
She only has one leg. And so
Yeah, and so we see sort of, like, there's a bunch of other things that are going on. We mentioned Marshall Hardwick beats his wife. Mm-hmm. Drunk all the time. Mm-hmm. So drunk that Maggie, the storekeeper, is able to break someone out of the prison.
Uh-huh. She comes over and is like, here, I don't remember what her excuse was for giving him a bottle of whiskey, but whatever. And then she convinces him to drink the entire bottle with her. And so she's, like, drank a little bit, but, like really, he drank most of the bottle of whiskey and is able to, like, break out a convict that, like, did something illegal, but only did it because, like, he's dumb as heck. I don't know. This convict is, like, the weirdest thing. And he's doing bad things, but he's also, like, he robbed the bank. That's what happened. He tried to rob the bank, and he failed. He's, like, really bad at doing crimes, but he wants to do crimes because he wants to be, like, important.
He wants to be a gangster, but he's sort of at the level of, like, a Sesame Street character right now.
Bless his heart.
Yeah.
And he seems like a really good guy, so Maggie winds up taking him, stealing him from the jail, and they run off together.
Yeah, this isn't super relevant.
It's not, they come back at the end, but...
Okay, yes. Okay, so that happens. Other stuff happens. I'm trying to, like, push us through this. If you haven't noticed. Stuff happens. Marshall Hardwick eventually decides, I'm just gonna skip a lot of the middle. Remember it all. Yeah, that's where I'm going. Okay, Marshall Hardwick, crazy and drunk, he decides he wants to kill Rose.
Because Rose is connected to this family, and he feels like the community has turned against him since he beat a mom.
Well, no shit.
He's like, so he's ticked at this family because he, like, blames them for the community turning against him, so he's decided he's going to kill Rose.
Not the fact that he just, like, struck someone down the train station in the middle of the day. It's, you know, it's their fault. I mean, this is every abuser's logic, right? It's not their fault that they hit someone. It's the victim's fault because they were there to be hit.
They did something wrong. Probably. Ish.
They made them mad.
So it's their fault.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
But we're not endorsing this logic, obviously. We're calling it out. Anyway, but yeah, that's his logic as well. And so he decides he's going to kill Rose. So he's, like, spent some time, like, stalking his family. And so he sees who he thinks is Rose wearing Rose's jacket out where her grandmother is buried. Turns out it's Rose's best friend who has gone to, like, pay her respects because at some point Rose's grandmother dies. We barely even talked about Rose's grandmother, but she's a very important character who, along with her grandfather, is someone that Rose really looks up to, is also, like, a huge part of this community. Same thing as the grandfather, basically. Anyway, she dies, and so Rose's friend is out there paying her respects. Marshall Hardwick assumes that this is Rose and attempts to kill her. Which, she ends up sort of, like, running. She runs far enough through the woods where she starts walking home and he's, like, following her. And she can, like, tell someone's out there. She's freaking creepy. This is why I don't go anywhere after dark. The woods after dark is real scary.
As we've talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about this a lot. Anyway, she can tell someone's following her. Obviously not anyone good.
Maybe it's sorry for you after the podcast. Following people.
Oh, what? She makes it all the way to, the steps of the church where her dad's the pastor. But he catches up with her. He has, a whiskey bottle. Again, he's drunk, so he's carrying around, a whiskey bottle. Is, about to smash her head in with it. Roberta Jean is her name. She's carrying a lava rock because she needs protection from her brothers. So she's just been carrying this rock for her whole life, which is pretty funny. And
her brothers don't mess with her because they know she has a rock. It's, so great. Her lava rock is, such a great plot point.
She doesn't go anywhere without it. Uh-huh. It's like when you live in college and you always lock your door even if you're just going, down the hall or downstairs.
Yeah.
This is the story of the lava rock.
Yeah.
And she manages to, hit him a little bit, I think. She somehow, she kind of gets, a little bit beat up because her blood ends up smeared on the church steps. Mm-hmm. But she still sort of manages to get away. I don't remember how all this happens.
Gets a little bit beat up, but she hits him with a lava rock, in the eye, I think, or something.
She somehow manages to get away.
And she runs down to the
back
creek.
To Rose's farm.
Well, she tries to get to Rose's farm. She doesn't get all the way there. She
makes it all the way to the creek, which is pretty close by.
Because she kind of was trying to, she tried to take, a shortcut
home.
Or, like, trying to shortcut. Or a long cut. I don't know. She knows someone's following her, so she's, like, kind of going out of her way. But what winds up happening is Marshall circles around and kind of figures out where she's going and meets her down at the creek.
Yeah, she thinks she's made it, and
then she's, like, resting at the creek because she's like, oh, no one's around. She just sprinted for, like, an hour. Yeah, she's freaking tired. She also got, like, beat up a little bit on the church steps.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not in the greatest condition. He, like, loves her again, whatever. Ends up tying her to a tree. And he's, like, the whole time he's just, like, sorry, like, I wasn't gonna kill you. I was gonna kill the other girl. But now I have to kill you. It's an inconvenience for him, really. It's what it is.
He tries to explain this, that it's, like, really her fault for wearing Rose's jacket. Again.
Yeah, again. It's their fault. Oh, it's Ricky's fault. Okay. Yeah. Ties her up. And he, like, leaves. He's gonna come back to kill her. What did he leave for?
Because there's the Black Panther.
Oh, that's right.
The Black Panther scares him off.
That's right.
The first appearance of the Black Panther.
Yeah, the Panther shows up, and he decides that he'd rather live and not be involved
with the Black Panther. Right, and also, like, he's, like, pretty sure the Panther's gonna take care of the girl. Like,
right.
Awesome. Two for one.
Yeah. So he runs off, and obviously the Rudatine's family figure out she's missing. They go out looking for her. They find her tied up to the tree.
Mm-hmm. And the Panther didn't hurt her at all. And she's cool. So they tie her up. They, like, untie her, and they, like, what happened? And she, like, explains the story. Marshall finds out that she's just been let go, and the Panther didn't eat her.
Somehow. I don't know how he finds that.
I'm not sure if he does. He does, because that's why he decides he has to, like...
Well, he decides he has to leave.
Right. And he decides he has to, like, leave town. And he's like, I gotta fake... He figures out he's gonna fake his death. And
even if the girl was killed, she would have been tied to a tree. Yeah. Either way, it's gonna look kind of bad.
I mean, they wouldn't have known it was him, though.
They wouldn't have known, maybe?
Anyway, he decides he needs to leave town. And so he finds
this guy... this is the end for me.
...who's just, like, passing through. And he's like, you kind of look sort of like me. And so he kills him. Takes his clothes.
This was, like, maybe the most cold-blooded part of the book.
Yeah,
for me. I was just, like, because we, like, you get the description, and it's just, like, holy crap.
And you're, like, you sort of look like, and he takes his clothes, and he, like, puts the guy that he killed in his clothes, and he throws him in front of an oncoming train.
Well, that's not even all of it. So he shoots him, right? And then the guy falls forward into his campfire. This is, to me, like, the most cold-blooded part. Hardwick just stands there and watches this guy burn, and he's just, like,
It's
not even that he's not remorseful, because at the point where he's, like, shot him and let him fall into a fire, I'm assuming he has no remorse, you know? But also the fact he's, like, not even, like, even at the level of, like, disgust for, like, watching someone's body burn, he doesn't even have that. He just stands there and watches it, and, like, in a very clinical, detached way, like, notices the detail, and just, like, has no problem. He, like, eventually decides he's burned badly enough and, like, kind of kicks him out, and then, yeah, it goes and chucks the body in front of the train, or he swaps clothes, leaves his, like, identifying whatever, like, he's carrying on papers, I don't know, maybe he has a badge, I don't know.
Whatever.
And adding detail at this point, throws the body in front of the train.
Which it, like, gets dismembered.
Yeah. And then he takes a horse and he rides off into Texas. Where he destroys some other people's lives.
Right, because he, like, is going from house to house, like, working for, like, food and a night's shelter. They come to this one house where the husband has, pretty bad dementia. Mm-hmm. And has no idea what's happening. So the wife is in charge. And so she's become, like, maybe she was always like this, but where we meet her, she's, like, very, like, strong-willed. She's the boss of the house because mm-hmm. she has to be. And he decides that he doesn't like her. And so he burns down her barn.
Well, yeah, so, like... This is also horrible. It's this older couple, like, on an isolated ranch. The husband has dementia, so, like, you can imagine why they really need a lot of help. Like, there's just two of them. Neither of them, I mean, they're older. One of them is not even all there. And so she's, like, and the wife is kind of, like, has some misgivings.
Right.
Like, in her gut, I guess, like, doesn't really trust them, but they really need help. So she's, like,
really need help. And the husband, because he has dementia, thinks that Marshall is his son.
Yeah.
So it's, like, very trusting of him and, like, excited to see him.
Yeah. Shows him where the whiskey's buried in the barn, which is great. He's, like, Hardwick's an alcoholic, and whiskey's his favorite thing. Yep. So at some point, he's, like, there for, I don't know, a week or something. a longer amount of time, and the wife is finally like, you know, I have to go to town. Can you watch, what's his name, her husband for a while? He's like, yep, no problem. And again, yeah, Hardwick has been very angered by this uppity woman who tells him what to do, which is unthinkable for someone who is there offering free labor.
Right. Well, that's what he wants.
Hardwick is obviously the person who hates women. Like,
unshocking.
He's an alcoholic, he's violent, but he clearly, like, deeply hates all women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, won't be told what to do, won't be, like, women are just there to be controlled and beaten.
Right.
And so he not only, you know, he's trying to, like, let things, he still wants to take revenge on Rose's family. He's, like, waiting for stuff to die down, like, getting himself into a better position, I guess, to take revenge. But then he also decides, you know, he wants to,
put this uppity woman in her place.
But... yeah. So he, burns down the barn.
And steals all their stuff.
And steals this box of jewelry.
Yep.
Valuable stuff. And
again, this is just like, you're just like, you didn't really think that he could get worse after he just, like, beat the guy in the face with a board just because he was in a bad mood. And he just, like, continually proves that he's worse. You, like, find out that his wife is, like, beaten to the point of almost death, like.
Yeah, even though, like, in Texas he doesn't actually murder anybody. It's just like,
ugh.
This, like, elderly couple out in the middle of nowhere on their ranch says now their barn is burned down.
It's unclear.
Hopefully it doesn't start a grass fire.
It's unclear if the dog dies.
Yeah.
Because he puts the dog in the barn as it's burning down, but the husband does run in and, like, grab the dog, but it's unclear if he grabbed it pre-death or not.
Asphyxiation. I don't know.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it not a nice guy?
And this is the point where Marshall Hardwick is like, yeah, I've done enough bad stuff in Texas, I can go back now.
I think it's time for me to go back. Everyone in, we haven't heard a lot about him, but things have just settled down. People are living their lives. Now that Marshall's gone.
His wife's like, her husband is dead.
Or his wife is like, pumped. Yeah. Obviously. Because she had like multiple points earlier in the novel. Was like, yeah, I'm gonna leave. Had like even told people that had like come to like take care of her after she'd been beaten that she was gonna leave him, but like, she didn't.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yep, so he comes back, and this is sort of like the climactic point of the book where things really start to go down. Because really creepy, like, we know from the omniscient perspective that he's around their farm, and he's watching them.
Yep.
And, but the family doesn't know, it's creepy. And so, the dad and the grandfather go out hunting for, like, the day, and I think they're supposed to stay overnight, too, and they're gone for, like, 2 or 3 days, maybe.
Yeah.
They go out hunting, and Hardwick's like, perfect. Just leaves, like, the women and children alone. And mom decides, okay, we're gonna go visit what's-her-name to go make jam and whatever. Have a weekend of canning. So they take off. And they're on their way, and they encounter a rattlesnake. I really hate snakes, guys. And I don't like reading about them.
We already talked about this.
Rose almost gets bit by it.
Yeah.
And because the horse won't go around this bush, which, yeah, because the horse is smart and knows the snake is there and doesn't want to die today. Rose almost gets bit. Luckily, the mom, like, jumps off the wagon and, like, grabs it and, like, throws it into the woods. I don't know.
she
beats it with a shovel or something.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that it's real hard to beat snakes to death with a shovel. We had a baby rattlesnake in our window well, and my dad tried to cut its head off with a shovel and, like, tried several times and, like, couldn't get it off.
This is a full grown one.
That's true.
There's more snake to cut.
Good God.
Anyway. So there's a snake, and the snake is, like, clearly a warning sign that, like, things are not going to be good this night.
Mm-hmm.
I think they go as far as to, like, tell us that. They're like...
Yeah, no, Rose is like, I knew this was a sign, or something like that. Which, okay, if the rattlesnake is the warning sign, like, holy crap, how bad are things going to get?
Because
for me, the rattlesnake is already, like, nightmare. Like,
but they do get worse.
I'm already at DEFCON 5 at this point.
Anyways, they go jam, don't they? They go can things, make jam.
Yep.
And on their way back, this is when things start to really go bad. So they're, like, on their way back, and...
They start, like, sort of, like, late. Like, it's going to take them at least till midnight to get back, which to me seems like hella scary and dangerous.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, the wind picked up. It's starting to get cold. It turns out it's starting to get icy. Oklahoma will have ice storms.
Fun! They're pretty.
Woo, yeah. When they're not taking down power lines and huge trees, but... So they're, like, they're traveling home in the dark in the middle of this ice storm. And they start to realize that there's this panther out there. Yeah. Like, circling them, essentially. Like, following them. Like, stalking them, like, all the way.
The Black Panther.
Black Panther. And so Rose's job is to, like, throw meat, basically, out the side of the wagon. Just enough to, like, keep the panther occupied and away. They keep going, and, like, Rose somehow is able to see, in, like, the dark or whatever, sees the same freaking rattlesnake, the same damn bush, the rattlesnake, like, on a tree, like, mouth open, like, fangs.
Like, someone nailed its tail to the tree?
Yeah, we find that out later. So, Rose, like, screams, because her mom's neck is, like, right there. Her mom sees it just in time, and it turns out it's the same rattlesnake, it's dead. But someone nailed it to the freaking tree branch. Mm-hmm.
Like, which, it doesn't matter if it's dead, if you, like,
oh my god,
get punctured by a dead snake, it still can give you poison, I think.
Can it? I don't know.
I would imagine
it. I believe that, but I don't know.
That sounds maybe made up, and maybe it is. I don't actually know, but I think that. Anyway, it's, again, not a great time.
So there's a panther following them. There's a panther following them, but there's someone out there that nailed a freaking snake to a tree.
Yeah. So before,
and must have seen them in the morning, too, the day before. There's obviously a person out there following them, too.
So they're, like, sweet. So they, like, book it home. The panther is, like, following them, like, closely. And this is the point where Rose's mom is like, okay, Rose, you gotta be a grown-up now, because, like, otherwise we'll die. Because Rose's little brother is, like, crying.
And, useless.
Like, totally thrashing useless. Around and making noise. And Rose is like, could you shut up?
Shut
We're
up.
Gonna get eaten by a panther or a man.
One job.
Like, shot by someone in the forest, so. Yeah. But they make it home. They, like, go inside.
They barely make it in because the panther, like, attacks, like, tries to attack Jamie, and Rose has to, like, throat, like, screams and throws herself at it.
Yeah.
The panther pins her down and, like, kind of, like, bites her head. Yeah. Not too badly. You can actually leave a mark. But they manage to get inside.
And so they're like, oh my gosh. And so the mom is like, shoot, because they're really worried the panther's going to, like, jump on their roof and, like, come in their house.
Yeah, dad and grandpa make it home a couple hours later.
Yep.
They manage to get outside of the panther.
They didn't see the panther, but, like,
it's out there. It's still, like, circling the house. The grandfather does go out. After he hears about the panther, he does go out to, like, see, he, like, goes towards it and sees it. And, like, there's this, like, weird moment. Because, should we just give it away? The grandfather recognizes the panther as being the grandmother. Mm-hmm. So.
And the panther was there just to protect them from Marshall, who's in.
You know Marshall's not his first name, right?
Yeah.
You're That's calling him Marshall, call him. Like, it's his first name?
It's, like, practically his name. That's what I'm gonna call him, because I don't remember what his last name is.
Hardwick.
Hardwick. Marshall Hardwick. But I'm just calling him Marshall.
You I started calling him Hardwick, but Nichelle decided to go with Marshall.
he's in the forest. And so, Grandmother Panther is protecting them. Mm-hmm. Which is nice.
But so before they know that, they're a little bit scared. A panther can come through the window.
Yeah.
Which, do panthers do that?
We're like crazy ones that are like stalking you, right?
I guess so.
It's like a rabid panther. Anyway.
It's scary.
It is scary. It would be horrifying.
Yeah. Anyway, and so this is, how does the book end?
I don't know how they get from here to the, like, death scene.
How does Hardwick die? Shoot, I don't know.
Okay, so I don't remember how they get here, but they wind up at Hardwick's house, where his wife still lives.
Oh, that's right. I read this book 2 days ago, and I suddenly can't remember.
So I don't remember how they get there, but, should I just give, do you want to figure out how they got there, or should I just tell about the end? So Rose is there, and so is, like, one of her cousins, maybe. I don't know, someone else.
I think they eventually decide to go to bed, and Hardwick's like, I'll go home and sleep.
Yeah,
Hardwick's like, I'll go home and be my wife.
Hardwick's like, I'm gonna go home and be my wife. I haven't seen her in a while. And the kids kind of figure out that's probably where they're... I don't know how they figure that out. They do. They go to his house.
I mean, who else... I think their train of thought, basically, is not that they have proof that it's Hardwick, but it's just, like, who else could it be? Like, who else is a vicious sadist?
Right. So they show up at...
Maybe another white person would just, like, set a fire.
Yeah.
But what white person would stalk you for several days? Like...
I don't remember the exact chain of events. They show up. I think they might have brought a gun with them. Because they're, like, gonna go kill him.
The girl... So, Rose and Roberta Jean, they are, like, we have to go to Hardwick's house. And they have, like, they show up and they have a rock, basically.
Good. I knew they had a weapon.
Yeah, they have a rock. And they show up, and, Sam, though, Roberta Jean's brother, has followed them as well. So there's actually three of them out there, and I think Sam has a real weapon, of some sort. The three of them are all hiding out, basically, in the backyard. Hardwick's come home drunk. He's beat his wife again. But at this point, the kids don't even need to be there, because what happens is that Hardwick's wife shoots him. Yep. Finally.
Yeah. Yep. She shoots him. And then they decide that everyone already thought he was dead, so, like, perfect. So they, like, with the help of Maggie, the shopkeeper, get rid of the body.
Why is Maggie there? Are you sure she's there?
Nope. Of course not. Am I ever sure if anything that happens in any of these plots?
Not usually.
Anyway, they decide to just dispose of the body and move on with their lives.
Yeah. Sam. Maggie's not there.
Maggie's not there. And it's great. And everyone lives happily ever after. Hardwick's wife marries the station master. Or they, like, run off together. And they're going to build the House of Purple Cedar. And, yep.
Yeah, that's it. They get rid of Hardwick's body and sort of wraps up Rose's narrative as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
The end. Thanks for joining us.
Close enough. Well, okay, sorry. Okay, the end is, Rose talks about a dream. This is at the end of her life when she's reflecting back. She talks about a dream she has of, like, all of them being in church and... You know, her grandmother's there, and, like, it's just a crucifix on the wall there that she sees, like, sort of take on, like, the image of Hardwick, like, where the crucified Jesus would be. It becomes this image of Hardwick, and her grandmother's there, too, like, right next to the cross, and it's like, this message about forgiveness, basically.
Uh-huh.
Because Rose is, like, how can you forgive someone, like, has done, like, horrible, horrible stuff. Also, like, at no point feels any remorse.
Right. And we're not even... Because sometimes they try to make these characters redeemable by, like, giving them, like, those tragic backstories. And we're not even, like, given that. He's just, like, a horrible guy. Mm-hmm. For no reason. And never feels remorse. Never, like, feels sorry for it. Just, like, continues to do horrible things.
Yeah. Yeah. At the last point, yeah. Her grandmother in her dream is, like, it's not for you to judge. Like, he threw the blows because he caught the blows. So that's the most bit of a tragic backstory, but, I could read the whole paragraph.
So, like,
but there's a lot of,
yeah.
I won't read the whole paragraph. It's a good paragraph.
It is a good paragraph. So, like, what happens is we, again, just like when Amapo first was struck, we get this larger narrative that it's not revenge, that it's, like, really forgiveness that is how we respond to these acts of terrible, like, violence and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and that becomes more powerful, is that responding with violence in kind isn't as powerful as just forgiving someone.
Mm-hmm. And it's a grandmother who overlays it with the entire, like, basically, like, Christian narrative.
Yeah.
The idea that, okay. That was a really weak ending. You're just like,
and it's over. Bye.
Okay.
Yeah.
We didn't do justice to the end at all. But
no.
Sorry.
We didn't do justice to probably this whole book.
Yeah.
Like we said, this is a book that probably should have not been read as quickly as possible.
Yeah. If you want to know more, you can read it yourself.
You should read it if you want.
It was very good.
Just know what you're getting into. Be prepared.
Yeah.
I think it's an important story. I think it's very, like, well told. I feel like Tingle does a very good job of, like I said, not making any one group of people, like, entirely good or entirely bad. Like, everyone has, like, layers of humanity. Like, even the people that, like, they gather in Amafo's house afterwards, the Choctaw people, like, some of them want to just, like, go kill people. Mm-hmm. I think he does a really good job of that. Yeah, good, important book.
Yep.
Yay.
Alright, do we have anything else we want to talk about?
I think we did most of our talking about things before our plot this time, too.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Do you want to just finish it out?
Sure.
So, what do we do first?
We should rate.
Rate first? Okay, so on a scale of Sphinx cat. To a mystical black panther.
Sphinx cats are those horribly ugly things. I'm, like, positive that they're, like, probably an evolutionary dead end. Like, I'm sure they don't deserve to live from the standpoint of evolution, and I think we should just let them all die off.
They're the ones that don't have any fur in them, the worst. Anyway, on a scale from those, obviously the bottom end, to the mystical black panther. Because as we came to find out in our research, as much as, like, the collective imagination believes that, like, panthers are black, that's not true.
We didn't find out that the panther was black until, like, sort of the end of the book, I feel like.
Right.
They just referenced a panther. And I just assumed that we were talking about panther or mountain lion. Because panthers are called mountain lions. Or mountain lions are called panthers. Mountain lions are also called, like, pumas, cougars, whatever. So I just thought we were talking about mountain lions. Are you okay?
There was a bug that landed on me. One of the perils.
Yeah.
Of something else. I really hate moths. It's fine. I flew away. But I had to check.
But then we find out that the panther is black. And I'm like, this is something, yeah, I was looking this up too when we read City and the Beast. And yeah, again, I just always assume, like, black panthers are super common in the jungle. Actually, like, a black panther, like, doesn't really exist. There's jaguars that, like, some of them have a mutation that makes them black. I think leopards also. But there's not really a black panther. Certainly not in the United States. Though, then I was researching it, because I was like, okay, there's no such thing as black panthers in the United States. Like, you can find the mutated jaguar in the jungle. Central America. Like, there's not in the United States. And I was looking stuff up, and some, like, news story from Waco, Texas, apparently...
2012.
Apparently, a mother and daughter saw a family of four black mountain lions, which nobody else was able to find them, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just big dogs. I don't know how you
would say that.
Maybe
they're bears. Anyway, so they're not real. But anyway, so on a scale of Sphinx cat to mystical black panther, we give this a mountain lion.
Yeah.
An actual creature.
Yeah.
That is found in...
I've seen one of those.
I've never seen one in real life.
I have. I saw one in Rocky Mountain National Park.
I had a dream once that I was being attacked with one.
Yeah, I saw it when I was hiking. We were, like, we stopped up in this, like, giant rock outcropping at, like, this high point in the trail, and we, like, went down, and we were sort of, like, turned around a switchback, and we looked back up towards the rocks we were on, and there was a mountain lion walking around, like, in the lower part.
Cool.
Pretty cool.
Anyway, so that's our scale. And then, for recommendation, we're actually re-recommending something.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because on our first episodes, we started recommending, like, 17 books at once.
Yeah.
So this is from one of our first episodes.
Way, way back. The very
way
first.
Way back. But it's, like, a much better fit for this anyway. So, because I think we recommended it for A Million Miles Away, right?
We did, yeah. It was for our very first. Sort of a tenuous connection to A Million Miles
Yeah, that was
away.
A horrible connection. This is a much better connection.
If you're interested in Native literature, we recommend, for me, it's one of my favorite books. Michelle liked it a little bit less.
I did like it a little bit less, but I can understand its merits.
Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silko. We talked about it before, but we'll talk about it again. It's about Teo, a Laguna Pueblo. Mm-hmm. he's biracial, or he's multiracial. But he comes back from the war in the Pacific, World War II, with shell shock or PTSD, and it's sort of his story of, like, healing, and it's his story of healing. I don't know what the end is going to be. There's a lot of fun stuff in it, in terms of, like, connections to mysticism, and, like, if you're interested in Native American literature, it's a good book. There was another book that I'd like to be able to recommend, but I haven't read it yet. It's in my to-read pile, so, sorry. The other book we were going to recommend, because, it could be, like, the connections between, okay, admittedly, the connections between Ceremony and House of Purple Cedar are really only that they're both American Indian literature.
Right.
That's their only connection.
Right.
So, which is, like, maybe not the best connection.
I mean, it's a large connection, though, because it's not just, like, who the characters involve. I think it also really reflects in the writing style and kind of the connection to, like, the supernatural and how that's viewed in the spiritual realm.
Right, like, culture, especially in terms of religion, the folklore. That's mm-hmm. what I was trying to say earlier when I was, like,
yeah,
describing Ceremony and really can only come up with, like, stuff and things. That's what I was talking about, was, like, culture
and folklore. Yeah, so I think, yeah, although their largest connection is that they're both about Native American communities, that there's larger connections about, like, this genre in which that lends itself to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, just in case, though, another book that I thought of recommending, because I felt like that book was similar in tone in a lot of ways. A lot of, like, unspecified, ambiguous ways that are only
just a lot of ways.
The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver, which is also maybe a little bit problematic, because we, like, are reading and talking about a diverse book, and then to recommend a book written by a white woman about predominantly white characters could also be seen as a miss. So
we're trying, so guys.
So two subpar efforts.
Isn't it better to try? If you add them together,
I don't know what you get. But we're trying. Poisonwood Bible, about a family told by, there's four sisters, told sort of alternately in their perspectives. We get a little bit from the mother, but this missionary family from, like, Georgia, the father is, like, a white Baptist minister, and they go to the Congo to be missionaries, and it's all about that, like, all the struggles that you think would happen being a white Baptist family from the American South in the Congo back in, like, I don't know, the 50s or the 60s, maybe?
I think
maybe even 50s. Earlier. 40s or 50s, maybe? Probably, yeah. 50s, I think 50s, okay. Is right. 50s. It's really interesting.
Yep.
I felt like it was a little bit similar in tone. I don't know why.
You gotta figure it out.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's all we have for you today.
Yeah. Alright, yeah, you can email us. You can write to us at smartgirlsyasax@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, we are Smart Girls YA, and on Instagram, we're Smart Girls YA Stacks. Yeah, tweet us things about, if you don't want to write us a full email, you can just send us a tweet. That would be okay.
That's fine. Yeah. We are also technically on Goodreads. It's just that I've been, real behind. I have, 13 reviews to write. So get to it eventually. You can come be friends with us on Goodreads.
Anyway.
Alright.
Bye.
Bye. We're gonna figure out how to edit out the, okay, so there.